On this week's episode of Tom and Matt Attack,
drama,
excitement,
fast-moving vehicles.
Really?
No, actually not. Fast-talking people, though, perhaps. It's Tom and Matt Attack. No, maybe not even fast-talking people. My brain is just going fleek after having to come up with the words fast-moving vehicles. So, yeah, how are you doing, Tom? I hope you're in a better mental condition than I am.
I'm good, thank you, Matthew. I think perhaps we could do with a write our intro competition.
I think so, yeah, maybe that would help. Maybe that would
ease the tension. If you can come up with a good intro for us for next week's show, please drop us a line through the usual social media.
Yes, at TMAcast, etc., etc. The previous bits will be at the end of the podcast.
Well, we hope this isn't representative of our podcast this week, so we have plenty to talk about.
Well,
don't you, Matthew?
You do, I think.
You do?
Perhaps
just been
more
playing,
than I do.
A brand new video game just came out.
I have, yeah, called Virginia. called Virginia. And it is a first-person walking around simulator from what I've played a bit.
No, it seemed that way.
It's set in the state of Virginia, I assume. I am not privy to what the term Virginia makes in the title. Very beautiful-looking game. Very nicely cel-shaded.
I thought it looked a little bit like Killer 7, actually.
It does, yeah. It's got also got a bit of Overwatch sprinkled in there for good measure.
Really,
especially.
Has it?
Yeah, I think so.
I didn't...
Like, no, you didn't get that?
No, but no. Maybe that's because I don't play Overwatch.
Oh, so. Not Overwatch. God damn it, Firewatch.
I was going to say, look, nothing like Overwatch.
It doesn't look anything like Overwatch. Overwatch is stylistically beautiful. This is just interesting. It's got this cel-shaded look to it, and it's very much like Firewatch has got this day-by-day narrative. Like, I started on Monday, and naturally now it's Tuesday at the part of the game.
Okay.
So I've played it for all of half an hour.
It looked a little bit like Firewatch to me, but with no dialogue.
Yes, but through silent storytelling. All the characters so far have told me the story by gestures, all things happening in the world,
and
all
things
being
written
down.
What's the setup of this game?
Essentially, I have in the part I have played, I have become an FBI agent. Then I walked over my body, and there was a glowing cupboard.
You walked over your body?
I was walking around my apartment, and then I looked down at my bed, and I realised my body was on the bed, and I went to interact with it.
Body experience.
Yes. Then when I went to react to it, a cupboard glowed red, and I turned and looked at the cupboard, and the door shut, and I woke up. Then I went into the guy who gave me my FBI badge's office, and I'm investigating someone for internal affairs.
Okay, so that was a dream.
The shutty cupboard, I hope, was a dream. Yeah. The bit of me investigating is actually the game. Mm. And pretty much, it seems to be me walking around pressing the X button on things when the reticle expands, and then me either picking up that thing or looking at it in greater detail. Uh-huh. That is the first half hour of Virginia. And, yeah, so that is kind of all it's been about, really, so far.
Okay.
It's kind of me having a walk around.
Well, I was playing quite a different game while you were playing that one. I was playing... let me just check what the title was. It was a game I picked up today because me and Matt went out to Horsens, which is a nearby town. Went to GameStop and I saw a game that I've been eyeing up for a while here in Denmark. I've seen it a couple of times.
You have. I believe you even mentioned it on this podcast
really?
Once or twice. Have
Teenage
you seen it?
Mutant Ninja Turtles. You heard of them?
They're like the Battletoads, right?
With the very original sounding Arcade Attack.
Okay.
This game's called Arcade Attack.
I can see from the back of the box here there are some sticks and some buttons, and yeah, it looks like a classic side-scrolling
Turtles
game.
So that is the direction they've been going for. They've been trying to recreate that magic Turtles in Time, the original arcade game.
The Konami classics of Turtles.
They've not quite managed to reach that level of polish or quality,
no?
I have
well,
to say.
Well, looking at the back of the box, I can see where you're coming from already.
Yeah, it's a fully 3D side-scrolling beat-em-up. Well, you have to have a co-op player. So in my case, I was having to play along with the computer player.
Yeah.
Which was fine. You have your usual attack. You have two attacks. You have your weapon attack and a kick attack. You have a jump and you have a block. You can also throw things.
So pretty standard fare in terms of Turtles attacks. Very standard in an arcade game.
So far, played through the first level, rather generic. Not much to get excited about. Several identical thugs entered the screen. I beat them up. I moved along. Yeah. More identical thugs beat them up. I moved along. Rinse and repeat. For a while, I can't say that the location was particularly interesting. It was a construction site.
Yeah.
And that was that.
Really?
I think there's some sort of special attack I can do. I can see I filled up a meter and it was glowing, but I couldn't work out what button to press. But handily, I have the box so I can read the manual and find that out. But I'm a fan of the Turtles and I have a fair few Turtles games. And I don't have one for the DS, and as Matt knows, I like to collect a game of my favourite franchises on every console. So I thought, I'll pick this up because this is a little bit different. This is unique. This is only, as far as I know, available on the DS. It's not a title I often see around.
No. But, I mean, perhaps there's very good reason for that after you playing it a little bit. I mean,
well, you know, my hopes were reasonably high. It was developed and published by Ubisoft because they had the Turtles license for a while. I don't know if they still do.
No, I don't think so.
So they created this original Turtles game to try and recapture the magic of a bygone era. I can't say it's got any particular charm is the word I think I was looking for.
Yeah.
There's a system in place where you collect coins, some sort of money, as you fight, and as long as you've got enough of these coins, you can continue.
Yeah.
You can't continue if you don't have enough coins. It costs 100 coins to continue. When I turned this game on, it had like 1,000 coins, 2,000, second hand.
Yeah.
And there's no way to clear the old save data that I could see. So
that's annoying.
And it also seems like a game you have to play through from the very beginning up till the very end in similar arcade fashion. You can't just play through a stage, leave it, in, otherwise you'd be playing through that stage forever.
Wow, that's really annoying.
Which, you know, isn't so good for a portable game because you want to be able to pick it up, play it for a little while, turn it off, and then hopefully continue later at the stage you're up to. But no, it doesn't look like you can.
Wow, that sucks.
Multi-card play as well, so you have to have another friend with this game to be able to play it multiplayer. And I sadly don't. So yes, if you can tell by my very unenthusiastic description of this game.
Yeah.
It's a little bit disappointing, to say the least. But yeah, it was about 149 Danish kroner. So, you know, that is quite, you know, it's like 16 British pounds. Okay, right. Yes, Matt was informing me some very important information there about a toilet roll. Maybe you should explain.
I heard a subtle squeaking off of the microphone, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. And it was a ee-ee-ee-ee. I was like, what the hell is that noise? That's really odd. And yeah, it was the cat as taken to in some of his angst at some point, taken into unwinding the toilet roll.
So that's why there wasn't on
there.
That's
why there is no toilet roll never on there.
I thought I'll put one on for Matt. He seems to have run out of toilet roll there.
We keep them in a little basket now that's hanging up by the side of the toilet.
Oh, I hadn't noticed.
Purposely, so this little munchkin will not unwind them and then go apeshit once he's unwound it, because he'll just kind of pick it up in his mouth and run around with it.
Strange.
Yeah,
little insight into Matt Boyle's life. There.
Into the life of Taxi the Cat. Yeah. So yes, Tom. All in all, not that great a game then.
Well, you know, I'm going to give it more of a chance, of course. It's not like I'm not going to play it again. It did cost me, as I said, about 16 quid. So I shall, endeavour to enjoy this game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
How about you? You've been playing anything else?
Not a lot else, to be absolutely honest with you. I started finally yesterday. I went to the city of Aarhus here in Denmark, and I picked up some PlayStation Vita games. I got Virtue's Last Reward, which is the second game following 999, Nine Doors, Nine,
what?
Blah, 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 blah. Did I tell you I was? Did I not mention I was playing?
Ages ago. We did cover it on the podcast. I just, when you started to recite the title, then I got a little bit confused.
It's part of the what's the name of the franchise called? I know the thing in the game is called an honorary game. It's Zero
Divide.
No, as good as Zero Divide is. I can't remember if it's called Zero Time, because the third one is called Zero Time Dilemma.
Okay.
Zero Escape franchise, is the name of the thing. Japanese visual novel series with light puzzle elements.
Okay.
Zero Time Dilemma is the third game in the series, which is what I'm actually playing through these games to build up towards. But the second one is called Virtue's Last Reward. And
I've heard of that.
Yes,
Vita title,
it was once a PlayStation Vita free game on PlayStation Plus, I believe, at one point.
Is that on the DS as well?
It is on the 3DS, yeah. The first game, 999, was on DS originally. Yeah. You'll recognise it probably, Tom, because there's a guy with a gas mask on the cover of it.
Maybe I've seen that in my games retail days.
I believe you would have. It looks a little bit, and this will play perfectly on a podcast like that.
Actually, I've never seen that cover
before. Never seen that game. It's called 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors. Very good game on the iPad, as I previously mentioned on this podcast.
Yeah, okay.
I played through it there because there's some puzzles in it, but like, I was like, oh, well, I'm in it for the story anyways, not necessarily the puzzles. But this version on the Vita will have the puzzles included, which I'm kind of thankful for because I want to get a taste of how that is in this game. I played the first 10-15 minutes and then I was nodding off just because I was so tired yesterday, so I haven't really had a chance to get into it.
Oh, it's not that it bored you to
No. It's very odd, sleep. Actually, because not only is there voice acting in this version, which I didn't experience in either the time I played the DS one or the iPad version, but now there's 3D polygonal sprites, so it's actual characters moving, whereas before it was kind of like a Danganronpa style, flat illustrated characters,
which is what you expect from the visual novel
yes
type game,
it is but
it?
This one seems to have a little bit more going on, so I'm curious. I've heard this is the best of the three, so I'm very much looking forward to playing
this. Genre seems to have increased in popularity in recent years. Is this perhaps because more are being ported now outside of Japan?
I think there's also the thing that, if you think about it, if you're localizing a game
Which is all text,
is a little bit easier, actually, than localizing a game that is, you know, a full game where you have to translate every aspect of it. I think a visual novel it's like translating a book. Yeah, exactly. And I think these are made by small Japanese teams. Sometimes a visual novel studio will only have like 5 or 6 members, one person writing story, one doing art, one doing animation, and one making the game engine and programming. So I think perhaps it's also a little bit cheaper to get the rights, I guess, maybe. I know nothing of localization, so perhaps that's out of ignorance. But yeah, I think games like this and things like Danganronpa were the breakthrough hits of this. And I mean, obviously that's expanded now beyond that. Yeah. I did also pick up one of the Seinran Kagura games because that was there in 149 krona, and it was one that wasn't released in Europe.
So this one, what type of game is that?
It's the same as the 3DS one, but I hear the Vita version is better and a little bit more accessible.
Side-scrolling beat-em-up,
yes. But I'll play it. I'll give it a go. But I also picked up Dragon's Crown, which is a game I've been after for a good long time. Good side-scrolling beat-em-up made by Atlas, kind of a spiritual successor to Odin Sphere.
Light RPG elements.
Yeah, it does. It kind of harkens back, apparently, some of the people who worked on the Dungeons and Dragons game.
Great series.
I'm very much looking forward to playing that. I've never found a copy of it for the Vita for cheap. I've seen it back in Wales once or twice, but it was like £25 mark.
I've got it on the Vita. I think perhaps it was a PlayStation Plus freebie once.
Really? Oh.
I think it was. I remember purchasing one version of it. I think that was the PS3 version I actually bought digitally.
I was going to buy the PS3 version as a physical thing, but then I thought, I want it for the Vita. It seems like more a game I will play on the go. Taxi the Cat, ladies and gentlemen.
He's really the star of the show today.
Outstandingly just going about his business, just not caring in the world that there are microphones on.
IKEA paper bag
that we sort our papers into for recycling.
And he found something in there that he really likes.
Maybe there's a fly. Or is he just climbing in?
We could
start. This works brilliantly on
narrating what a cat's doing.
Okay, cool. He's just going to sit in there.
Forget Let's all cat be videos. This is the cat podcast. We narrate the actions of a cat.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow.
Called Tom and Cat Attack.
He's really
He's just having a sit in there. It's all okay. Right. It's okay. He's having a groom now.
You can probably imagine what it's like cats jumping into
things. Oh, Jesus Christ. This does not play well on radio.
No, sorry. Anyways, let's move on.
Yeah, so I picked those up. Virtue's Last Reward was about 100 krona, and I think the other two were 149, which seemed like decent prices when I looked on the internet.
Yeah,
like
I mean, this Turtles game was 149 as well.
Dragon's Crown is not a game I've seen for cheap anywhere, so I was like, okay, cool, I'll get that. They had one or two more JRPGs. Demon's Gaze, I think one of them's called
Demon's Gaze.
Yeah, and oh god, I can't remember the name of the other game, but there was other things. I was there and I was like, oh, well, should I get that? And they seemed to be roughly the price they were on Amazon. Like I said, these are American ones as well, so I was like, oh, go on, I'll get them while they're here. I had a look at their Game Boy games. They also had a copy of Guardian Heroes Advance boxed for 129 krona, but I left that behind. I was more adamant.
You have that game, don't you?
I do. I have a cart only version, and I thought, well, it's a good game. I don't really like it enough to have to spend an extra 12 quid to upgrade to a box version.
It's a pretty good sequel to Guardian Heroes.
Yeah, it is. It looks that way. Yeah, but alas, I did not pick it up. You've been buying, playing anything?
I used to sound very desperate. It's like clutching the straws. I've got plenty I can talk about. I actually got to have a go at King of Fighters 14 last weekend.
Oh, really?
After we did the podcast. And yeah, I like it a lot.
Good.
If you're familiar with the series, you'll pretty much know what to expect with this game. I'm trying to think of anything that really makes it stand apart from previous titles, other than how it looks visually. Of course, it's the first time for a main series King of Fighters game they've been fully rendered in 3D. You shouldn't be disappointed in the way the game plays, because it plays pretty much as you would expect it to.
Yeah.
The storyline is pretty similar to the other games. There's a tournament, King of Fighters tournament. There is a champion who's, I think he's referred to as the champion. He's a new character.
The champion.
He's a funny kind of big, stupid guy who's got lots of money, and he puts on this tournament.
Okay.
And then, of course, there's some kind of intervention after you've won the championship, and some sort of powerful being emerges, which you must fight. And then that is the end of the game.
Right. What is that powerful being?
It's weird. Creature with floaty hands. He's humanoid. He's got his hands. I think he's got hands that float by in size, and he can fire them out.
Doesn't seem really King Fighters.
There's occasionally been more kind of fantastical enemies in King of Fighters, hasn't there? I'm trying to think now. It's very similar to, I remember, the plot of King of Fighters 96, perhaps 97.
Is that the one where Aori kind of becomes like demon Aori? Or
no, it wasn't that one, actually. I don't think. I know there's a big stadium at the end, and there was a fiery creature that appeared at the end.
Yeah.
Anyway, so nothing out of your dream in terms of that, but I enjoyed playing through it as much as I've enjoyed playing through any King of Fighters game. There's a little bit of banter between the characters, which is nice to see, reflecting the history of the series.
That's good.
Mai and Andy are together, and Mai says something to Andy. Do you leave the air conditioning on? We went away for the tour. It's, oh, sorry. Yeah, I left it. How many times have I told you not to? Because they're playing out their relationship. It's kind of fun that there's that attention to detail with these mainstay characters and how they have progressed, because, you know, those two got together throughout the storyline of King of Fighters.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's plenty for old fans of the series to enjoy. I can't recommend it enough if you like the series.
Well, I mean, I'm willing to kind of give them the benefit of the doubt, to be honest. If you're saying, like, okay, this is a good King of Fighters game that has transitioned to 3D, I think maybe next game I will be expecting a bit more than that. But if you're saying, okay, this is a competent thing, this is going from 2D fighter to a 3D fighter, then I'd be perfectly happy with that, I think.
Yeah, introduces some characters who haven't been in the series for a while. I can't, maybe, excuse my pronunciation, but Hanaruru, she's a Samurai Showdown character who has a bird.
Okay. I know the Hanmaru, one you're talking about, but I'm not sure.
Maybe I've got that. Maybe I've totally butchered that name, but she was one of my favourites in Capcom versus SNK.
Yeah,
and she returns here along with a few others. There's a few new characters as well. Happy to see them. Yeah, and there's not much more to really say about it. It's rather good, and yeah, okay. King of Fighters fans or fighting game fans in general should check it out.
Yeah, cooler gang.
Indeed, I've played another fighting game this week, which was very nostalgic for me and reminiscent of another series which has ceased to continue, and that was Last Battle. Now, Last Battle is very much Power Stone.
Power Stone.
And Power Stone, for those who know it, is a very good, very enjoyable arena-based fighting game.
Now, Thomas, correct me if I'm wrong. This is the second time you've said that something is Power Stone-like on this podcast in this very year.
There was another game. There was an add-on for Disney Infinity 3.0. And I was going to mention it, but I've forgotten what it was called. What was it called? Battlegrounds? Or
Battlegrounds,
is it called Battlegrounds?
Yeah, it's something like that.
Marvel Battlegrounds. And this followed the Power Stone template. Not quite as closely as The Last Battle does, though. Last Battle is based upon a
French comic book series.
And it has a very refreshing, bright, pastely visual style to it. And it doesn't go out there and claim it's French or anything, but of course, when the characters start speaking, they haven't
localized it.
So there are subtitles, but the characters still speak in French. French, which is actually really refreshing and gives it its own unique sort of thing.
Yeah, well, that's good at least.
So the game is of a certain quality.
Yeah.
It's a very good attempt at a Power Stone game.
It is.
I say attempt sounds a little harsh, but nothing's ever going to top Power Stone. Marvel Battlegrounds didn't manage to do that, and this doesn't quite, but it does come closer in some regards as to when you're fighting, there are collectibles. You collect three of these collectibles,
yeah,
and then you power up. Instead of, like in Power Stone, where every character got their own unique upgrade, in this game has three. And depending on the types of power-ups pick up, you'll get that particular upgrade. Some turn you into a superhero-like character. Some turn you into like a more demonic character. And each of these have their own abilities. But there is only three of them. And those are shared among all
the characters. So that depends
characters. What, depends like, what you pick up.
Yeah. Rather than, say, like a Gradius-type system where you can go, okay, well, if I have two of these power-ups, then I'll turn into this form.
No, yeah, it depends. Like, it's at random. You start a match, and then one of the particular power-ups will be present in that
match.
Yeah,
and then depending on what that is, you pick up, and then you can hit an enemy.
You have to collect three, so hit an enemy, and one flies off them, and you can try. So that's great, and that's what really Marvel Battleground was missing.
Yeah.
Because it is part of the core Power Stone formula that makes Power Stone so fun. You're all trying to scramble to collect the three Power Stones in order to upgrade. And also, of course, littered around the arenas are objects that you can throw, and it gets quite silly when you get these massive objects and you can throw them at your enemies.
Yeah.
And it's got a sense of humor. There's a fish you pull out of the water, and you can start hitting the other opponent with the fish.
Right.
So it doesn't take itself too seriously. It's got a story mode, which is fairly bare bones, but it has a little cutscene between telling some sort of story.
Did it give you any indication of what the comic book itself might be like, or did you do any research into that?
No, I didn't actually. The story itself was fairly generic. But I assume if you know the characters, then you probably get a little bit more from it.
Okay.
Perhaps. But it was fun. It's fun and bright and breezy. And I'd say it was worth the money.
How much was that on PSN then?
I think it was about £10.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
But I mean, at least, hey.
Discounted price because it's the
PlayStation
first week.
Plus, yeah. It was the same with Virginia, actually. That was only 66 krona. So I guess that's about £7.
I remember first hearing about this game when it came out on the PC.
Steam, me too.
Steam game. And it's great to see these games get ported to consoles. Dear Esther as well, which is recently released, I picked up too.
How is that?
Don't know.
No, I have not played it. I told you, like, and I'm kind of a bit about Virginia. Perhaps I should have done a bit more research because the description of it on PSN says, like, oh, this game has been likened to Twin Peaks and to True Detective and series that I really care about.
Then again, there have already been games that are
Have already been games
Not based, but taken inspiration from...
Such as Alan Wake.
Twin Peaks, yes.
Yeah.
And also Deadly Premonition.
Yes. But I also, I don't know how I feel about the whole narrative without speech thing. It's an interesting thing, but I don't know if it's going to pull me through.
It's fairly relaxing. The music was very good.
The music is beautiful. It's done by like Prague's Philharmonic Orchestra, which is amazing because I'm probably going to get that soundtrack if it's available. Mm. But on the other hand, it just feels like I'm playing an episode of a TV show, but without the enjoyment of watching a television program. So
usually television programs have dialogue. So
I think that would add a lot to it, though. I think here the music's done beautifully. The way the music works is very well. But I mean, they don't even because it's so. Trying to keep the flow along and trying not to let you drag too long. I got this file for the internal affairs thing and I couldn't even have a chance to read it properly because it was just kind of like, okay, as if, you know, you've been given this file, you're browsing it over and then you put it in your bag. And I'm like, well, I wanted to fucking read that. There's not even any time for you to give me dialogue, let alone to read.
Yeah, I think it's one of them games you have to spend a bit more time with to become adjusted to it and get into the world and the story. I think there's a potential to be a rather good experience.
Yes. Oh, well, I mean, I'll see how it is, but I still stick to my guns. I think perhaps I shouldn't have bought this game because I think I'm done with the whole first-person walking genre.
You're not going to pick up DRS, so
I don't think.
Unless I play it and I come on this podcast
and you tell me
it
is of the quality of
Rapture,
I will not buy it.
You will not buy it.
I will not buy it unless you tell me
unless
it is
I tell you that. Okay.
Of that same ilk.
I hope so. I'm a little bit dubious as, obviously, it's a game they made before Rapture. And
yes.
I can imagine Rapture is an improved version of what this is. But they have gone back to this and kind of spruced it up a little bit for
but
us.
But I mean, Dear Esther is a game also that I remember it being released and getting much critical acclaim. And I was kind of a bit disappointed. I couldn't play it, so...
So it's nice it's available. And I tell you, my... Yes, you know, there's the new folder systems on the PS4.
Yes.
My unique section, as I call it, for these walking games is becoming quite full.
I'm going to make a first-person walker section.
Yes, with this Gone Home and Firewatch and everyone's gone to the Rapture. And... Yeah, it's filling up nicely.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Got a good selection.
But
it
just shows it's great that they're... I mean, I'm not only talking about these first-person walking-type games. There have been Hohokam as well, for example, that is in there. And they're... Oh, gosh, I'm trying to think of others now. Journey, of course. I've plonked that in that folder. There are a lot of undefinable games. And I think that's good that we have that nowadays, that you can have a game which is difficult to define. But I suppose what's happened now with these... walking simulators is they've become a genre of their own, and actually watching the trailer for Dear Esther, it says the first of its kind created a genre.
Yeah. I think it did.
Yeah.
I think this is the
first.
There
was Unfinished Swan. I don't know.
But Unfinished Swan
is different.
Not this kind of thing, is it? It's not
but
new...
I still class it within the same area, at least, of a unique experience. It's a first-person explorative walking game, but it has got a fairly unique gameplay mechanic that makes it stand out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can't tell you about Dear Esther yet, I'm afraid, but maybe next time, next podcast, I'll be able to fill you in on my experience with that. But I say I've got a backlog of I've not played Gone Home yet.
No.
And I've not finished Firewatch yet, which I know for weeks I've been saying I need to go back and finish Firewatch.
Firewatch is not a long game.
Do yourself a phaser. That's the podcast time.
Don't kill yourself with Star Trek weapons, please. Mm. Do yourself a favor. Just take tomorrow. Just get up early instead of watching an episode of Evangelion or whatever you do now on a Sunday morning.
It's either Clone Wars or Naruto.
Yeah, just sit there and play through Firewatch. It doesn't take too long.
Yeah, I should do that. I should do that. I mean, yeah, put it on my list of things to do.
Yes.
I did play a game I bought a couple of weeks back and hadn't had a chance to experience yet, and that was Strike Vector EX.
Yeah.
Did I mention this to you that I picked this up?
You did indeed, yes. You said
do you know what this game is or not?
I do not know what it is.
Sci-fi combat game
in
vehicles. It looked a little bit from the trailer like a Star Fox-esque thing.
Yes.
With some rather enjoyable shooty sections.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's nice. It's got... You can tell it's not a huge game with a huge budget, but actually for, you know, what they've done is fairly professional, actually, when you compare it to some other of the more indie titles.
Yeah.
You play a pilot who's just been recruited. You're part of like an order at the beginning. There's a group, a faction.
Yeah.
You break away from that faction along with another pilot and join these pirates.
Okay.
And the gameplay revolves flying around and shooting enemies, basically. But you have some greater abilities.
Yeah.
You have kind of make this sound more interesting than it. It's fairly standard, I suppose. You've got your gun, you've got your dashing around. So if you hold down a button where you move, you move faster. And I can't actually describe this game without making it sound like every other game of this type, but it does it rather well.
Does it play a little bit maybe like Warframe did? Like that?
I've never
kind
played
of...
Warframe. Oh, okay. But it's got a great soundtrack, rocky, fast-paced. You'll find, though, when you're shooting enemies, it helps to slow down. And it's got, like, a stationary mode. So in that mode, you press L1 and R1 to move up and down.
Yeah.
Just your pitch, would that be? And, you know, you move around with the right stick to... and these have got a dodge, but if you hold down the button and move the stick, you'll dodge. So when the... It's got a fairly robust system.
Okay.
For battling. Which
nice.
It's so much better than something like Star Wars Battlefront. For example, if I was to compare it to the Fighter Squadron parts of that, you have one of the sticks you can push in, the right stick, and you get zoom shots. When you're in stationary mode, it's quite easy to see enemies in the distance, and they don't have this thing of like they fly away into distance and you don't see them.
Yeah.
And they will actually stay in an area because they're using the same sort of system as you are. You know, they stay stationary to shoot sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's fairly nicely presented, and I like the characters. I like the voice acting is incredibly good. The character illustrations are really well done. The overall atmosphere is very likable. You want to spend time in the world. I'd look into trying it out. I like it.
Yeah, actually one or two people in work have said they're also playing this.
Okay.
I hear there's multiplayer components to it as well.
This is a big part of the game, actually. I think that the story mode is secondary.
Yeah.
To the, because it's sort of like fairly small arenas.
Yeah.
Where you fight in. It's open, you know, you're in the sky, but the actual area you have to fight in, it keeps for fast-paced, close combat fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the vehicles are cool. Design-wise, this game is very nice, and it's got a certain level of polish and quality to it, which you don't always find with these indie games.
That's cool.
Yeah, so that's what I'd say about that.
Yeah, maybe I'll pick
I like
that up.
I mean, you could welcome to try it if you'd like to.
How much is that on the PSN?
About £10 again, I think.
Okay, fair enough. Maybe I'll pick it up
reasonable.
At the end of the month. Yeah. Other than that, I haven't really been playing a lot. But I will fill dear podcast listeners in on the trials and tribulations of me getting Tom Parry a copy of a certain Shining fighting game for the PS4. Let me just open my Amazon just so I can get the thing.
So, Matt, you wanted to buy me something for my birthday, which is very lovely of you.
I did want to get
you
something for your birthday. And because, you know, you are a big fan of fighting games, I wanted to get you one you didn't have. I also wanted to maybe spend a little bit more because it was your 30th birthday and get you something I thought you would truly appreciate. This game is called Blade Arcus. Blade Arcus from Shining EX.
You went above and beyond.
Dot. Yes, I imported a game from Japan, or at least so I thought. I was buying a game that was from Japan that someone in Europe had imported and was selling over Amazon.co.uk.
Mm-hmm.
Spanish gentleman, as it turns out. So I sent a message going like, hey, actually, you sent me a copy of Galgun. This isn't what I wanted. I wanted the game I ordered. Da 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 da. And the guy said, oh, shit, sorry, no problem.
How do you get these confused? This is the question, because you're talking about that you bought a PS4 game and you got a Vita game.
I got a Vita game.
Admittedly, they probably have anime-style characters on the front cover.
Yeah, perhaps. But, I mean, one's Japanese, one is European. So I said, hey, I got this game. Can you please send me the one I ordered? It's a birthday present. Da, 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 da. I go, okay, yeah, I'll refund you. I'll send it to you. It'll be fine. Keep the one you have. And then, lo and behold, I turned up yesterday to open a package that I received on Wednesday, and it's actually another copy of Galgun. So I now have two copies of Galgun.
I don't know how you can make that mistake, because the reason was
well,
I sent you the wrong one, so to send you the same one again.
My in my expressed opinion, reading the reply over again.
You've been in contact and told them.
I didn't, because they refunded me the money. So what am I going to say? He's like, hey, you don't be trying. You sent me two of the wrong copy of the game now. So I now have two copies of it. One of them will be finding its way somewhere. Probably two of them, in all fairness. But I actually put it in last night to give it a quick 5 minutes, and is everything you would expect Gal
I've seen
to
footage
be.
Of this game.
It would be surprisingly fun if it weren't so surprisingly creepy. It is essentially an on-rails shooting game where there are women appearing at you, and essentially you just have to kind of tap the screen at them on the Vita version to make them disappear. And then that gets slightly creepy when you have, instead of bombs like you would have in a regular shooter and on-rails game, you just have to, like, rub people in places, and it's just like, I don't know how I feel about this. So yeah, I played it. Other than that, I've tried to avoid doing that as much as possible, because then if you're just hitting people and they're kind of like fainting with hearts above their head, it doesn't really give off that much of a creepy vibe as the special mode does. And I'm sure there's a camera or whatever in there, but I haven't looked into those features for obvious reasons.
Yeah, so this was a game you never intending to play, but ended up playing out of your pure curiosity.
Yeah, and it wasn't like, if there is one of these crazy, like, games I would have got, it would have been Akiba's Trip, because that genuinely looks like it could be a decent hack and slash.
Mm.
And yeah, I ended up with two copies of Galgan now, so I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do with it. Because I don't even, you know what I mean? Like, I don't even really want to either go to GameStop and be like, oh, I've got to trade in this copy of Galgan. Or do I sell it? Do I...
It's always thought, you know, to do that would to say you don't want it for one. So I don't think you should feel creepy about that. But it's also one of those games I can't imagine you'd feel that comfortable playing with in public. On public transport,
especially on a portable
system, a portable system, and you're rubbing these ladies down.
Well, I guess it depends what you're into, really. Maybe that's how you get your kicks. But yeah, like I said, it would be a surprisingly good game if it wasn't for the skeebiness of it all. Because when you're not doing that, it's all taking itself lightheartedly. And in look at us, we're doing this.
And you feel it maybe crosses the line a little bit to the point where it makes you feel a little uncomfortable to play it.
Kind of just gets you to that point where, you know, when it was the Dead or Alive simulator, and it was just pretty much like people putting... Did you see this? It was like a Tokyo Game Show, I think it was. They showed Dead or Alive in VR,
this.
And it's just literally like people putting their heads in.
And I saw an image of a guy like with his, on the floor with his head
like
bent
crouched.
Upwards. Like,
It's just like... There's a line for me in games where it's like, haha, or there's just like, nah, maybe you didn't have to do that. There's other places. There's better things for you out there if
pervy.
That's what you're into.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, alas, I have two copies of
As
Gargum.
I say, thank you for
Don't worry. I actually just messaged. In the end, I've ordered it from Japan, so I'm expecting it to come, and I just even messaged the seller there to make sure.
Well, you got two copies
of
Galgan out of it, so there you
go. I did get two free copies of Galgan out of it, in all fairness. So, yeah, if anyone really wants to trade me for Galgan or has, like, ease or something for the Vita I would actually play, please let me know. That'd be nice. But other than that, I picked up a few games just recently, all of an hour ago or 2 hours ago in Horsens with you, Tom Parry. And there were some Game Boy Advance titles. Those of you know, I've been collecting Game Boy Color things, and I've been slowly dipping my toes in the water of Game Boy Advance.
Hmm. What's that been like for you?
It's been all right. I seem to have a higher win-to-loss ratio in licensed titles with the Game Boy Advance than I do with the Game Boy Color. Naturally speaking, I went to a shop today, the same one we always go to, a secondhand store near us, and they had a much richer assortment of Game Boy Advance games that hadn't really been picked through. So I got Shining Soul, which is a Sega Shining RPG, I believe developed by Camelot, or it's at least some studio that you wouldn't expect to have developed it. I can't remember. Maybe even Suda51 had his hands in that one. I can't quite remember. Mm. I picked up F-Zero Maximum Impact.
Maximum Velocity.
Velocity, sorry. What's Maximum Impact?
That's a King of Fighters
game.
That
is a King of Fighters game. God damn it, you've invaded my brain. I picked up a copy of Alien Hominid, which is a quite rare Game Boy Advance game, and a game that I've long since loved, ever since playing it in Newgrounds.
Quite
back
a charming
in the day.
Port of it, actually. Yeah. Nice animation.
Yeah, I mean, anything by Behemoth is generally pretty damn good. And I also picked up a copy of Madagascar Operation Penguin because the unbox Game Boy Advance games were like £6 and the box one was £5. And I was like, I want to round my collection off to 150. So I did that.
And is that it now for the moment? Or are you still very keen on collecting more?
I will probably pick some stuff up. There are things I want, but I'm not in any hurry. I'm just kind of like, well, if I see stuff, I'll get stuff. If I don't, I don't. I'm not going to go out of my way. My video game purchases of late have actually been slowing down a little bit. And we kind of talked about this as we do every now and again, where I think we've gotten to the point where we have everything we want. I have like 24 games in my Game Boy collection for the original GMG. And then I'm just like, well, you know, do I really need to spend £4 or £5 a pop on some of the rarer Game Boy Color games that I actually have no interest in playing? So
That's really it. And we had this discussion earlier where we were sitting in Horsens about collecting for the sake of it, collecting because something is like a holy cow of gaming, a holy grail, shall we say.
Yes.
And you only own it because it's somewhat rare.
Yeah, and this came about because
you don't necessarily want to play it.
Much like EGX is going on in the UK at the moment. Hello to people at EGX. There is a Copenhagen Comic Con going on. Oh, that's a fun thing to say. Copenhagen Comic Con, Copenhagen Comic Con, Copenhagen Comic Con. And in Copenhagen Comic Con, there's also a GameStop Expo currently taking place. And in this GameStop Expo, they have a variety of new games on display, and they also have people selling some older vintage games.
Mm-hmm.
There's one guy there trying to sell a European, I believe, copy of Stadium Events for 9,000 kroner, which, if anyone of you know anything about European NES games, you would agree that is fucking balmy, because that game is about 300-400 quid at max.
Mm-hmm.
But alas, you know, he's trying to get what he can get for it. I respect that. Being said, I would never pay that for that, and it's starting to get to the point where I have some games on my shelf now, like Spider-Man Separation Anxiety and a rental copy of Gold Medal Challenge 92 for the NES.
Which you have no intention of playing?
That I have no intention of ever playing, and are worth upwards of about £200-300.
In my experience, when I've had games like that, I've sold them.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that is the way I am going to go with these now.
I sold my copy of Metal Gear 3 Subsistence because I have to say, I'm not a huge Metal Gear fan. I do appreciate the series and definitely of a very high quality. But I couldn't get into Metal Gear 3, to be honest. And
I like Metal Gear 3.
And, I did end up purchasing the standard version of the game because I'd still like to give it another go.
Yeah.
I had this thing that was sitting on my shelf that was worth a lot of money.
Yes, exactly.
And when you can still play the game at a fraction of that price, then why do you need this? I know there's some exclusive things on Subsistence.
Yeah, but most of it's online play, which you can't do anymore because PlayStation Network's shut down.
Yeah, it didn't interest me enough. So I sold it, and I've done that with several games. Sometimes I've regretted it, but most of the time I've been quite happy to part
with them.
Well,
the reason I've kept...
Animal Crossing on the GameCube.
Yeah, I wish I still had a good copy of that. I had an American one, and I can't find the disc for it, unfortunately. Mm. I love that game. Animal Crossing on the GameCube is fantastic. I want to get into New Leaf now that they've done all of these updates to it. I need to fire it up, because apparently they're even going to weed my village for me, so I can get back on
that. Oh my, things like that would maybe persuade me to play Animal Crossing again, but as you know, I'm not a fan.
As you know, I go down that rabbit hole hard when that game gets updated, so we'll see. Yeah, any more for any more? Or should we briefly touch upon this NX news and this NX hype that's been going around?
I just briefly just want to voice my frustration about Star Wars Battlefront for a moment, if I can.
Well, that it's a terrible game with a lack of variation. You finally come around.
I bought the Season Pass because I like the look of some of the forthcoming content.
Yes.
But as it is, the game doesn't seem to allow you to enjoy that content as easily as it should, I don't think. Because I was trying to play some of the new Death Star content the other night.
Yeah.
And I can select, you know, the section on the main menu that allows all the Death Star content is here. And then it will randomly put you in one of the matches. And of course, not all of the types of game let you play... You know, the restricted. For example, I kept getting Fighter Squadron.
Which isn't actually in the Death Star, right?
Flying around it. Well, flying around two Star Destroyers, and there's a Death Star in the background. But I don't like Fighter Squadron. I couldn't find an easy way to say, I want to play Death Star for sure. I want to play like a... I love playing Cargo.
Yeah.
So if I could play Cargo on the inside the Death Star, I'd like to do that. I can't. There's no option for me to do that. I guess the only way that could happen is if I went on there and got the game mode. But yeah. It only said there were three different types of game mode available on Death Star at this point.
Yeah.
And it was going to put me in one of three.
And what were those three? I guess it's just the...
Well, one was Fighter Squadron and one was Battle Station. Battle Station seemed to me, that's what I kept getting, which is, to me, the same as Fighter Squadron. But you have Y-Wings flying over the Star Destroyers and you have to stop the Y-Wings.
Okay.
But otherwise, it's Fighter Squadron.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so there's two modes which have no interest. And the third mode... which I can't remember what it was, but I wasn't getting that one. And that was probably,
actually running around in the Death Star?
I hope that was running
stuff.
Around in the Death Star shooting thing.
Because if he's flying around the Death Star, I think you've been conned, mate. That doesn't sound like a map, but an open space.
Well, maybe I'm missing something, but I feel like the way you can enjoy these modes is kind of restrictive.
Yeah.
And when I paid money to just enjoy the game, I want it to be more open. And I won't get into the rest of it. For example, all those bloody costumes and alien heads which you need to play endlessly in order to unlock.
Yeah.
And you've already talked to me today about the weapons and you know, everyone has their issues with this game, it would seem.
Yes.
But these things have really frustrated me. On top of, you know, it took me a while to buy that season pass.
Well, I mean, it's 40 quid on top of a 40 quid
game. I had to get it cheaper. I only got it when I got a 30% discount off it.
Yeah.
There was an offer going around. I sent me an email. I said, now 30% if you want it. I was like, well, it's the only way I'll get it is if it's cheaper. So I went for it. But it's a big con. I don't know.
It is, yeah. I feel this way about a lot of EA games, and I'm actually kind of worried about Battlefield 1, because I will pick that game up now. I can't remember if we really talked about it on the podcast, but I played that beta and I quite enjoyed that game. I'm interested to see what that game has to offer. I will pick it up. That being said, I wish there was like an 80 quid version of that game I could buy that would come with some extras and stuff that had a season pass, because at the moment there doesn't seem like there is. There seems like there's the standard version and then there's an advanced version which is like, hey, you get some extra single player missions and some skins. Mm. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. I don't want to pay 30 quid extra for some extra single player missions. I want to pay 30 quid so I don't have to pay any more money for the online content, because that's what I'm going to play the most of.
Yeah.
But we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, but that's all I have to say about that. I'm just quite disappointed that I got really excited about the Death Star content and I just can't get into it in the way I'd hoped I would be able to.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
Gutted. Okay. What else?
You were going to talk about...
Oh, yeah, the NX news. Okay, cool.
Is this really news, or is this just massive rumour and speculation?
No, the thing I was going to talk about is just more this kind of... the churning of NX. As October grows nearer, when apparently Nintendo are going to do some kind of reveal, supposedly.
Which is very exciting.
More information is starting to come out, and like Ubisoft have gone, Nintendo have learned from the Wii U. They said they're very excited about this platform. They think it's going to be something that is going to blow everyone away. I've also heard that there was a story going around of the president of the Pokemon company. He said, well, the NX is going to be amazing. It's going to completely change people's mind on gaming. It's going to do this. It's going to do that. And then, of course, you've got this thing going around of people saying Foxconn now, where they create the iPhones and stuff. They're going into their preliminary production. I've seen that you cannot order Wii U's from Nintendo anymore as of like next Friday if you're a retailer. So that'll be the last chance you can go, okay, cool, I want 30 Wii U's.
The Wii U's won't be available into next year at all.
No, they will not. They're stopping production and they're winding that down. There's also then the strange rumor that I don't really believe. I asked you earlier if you had any thoughts on it, and you were kind of in the same boat I am. That apparently they think, or at least some
analysts have
said, I saw
this advertised by, was it GameStop on Facebook or something?
Yeah. That apparently Nintendo may be doing a surprise reveal and, hey, it's out for the holidays.
I don't see it myself. They've said March, you know, that's... They've delayed Breath of the Wild
until March. Yeah, but I mean, they said it'll be out by March. They didn't say it will be out definitely in March 2017, because that's the end of their financial year.
Hmm.
But apparently the initial run is going to be 10 million units, and people are thinking, well, if it's going into prototypes now, maybe they'll be ready for it.
To kill the Wii U before that game's even released.
It's strange
because you'd imagine the Wii U still be in production, so if people didn't want to buy the new console, they'd have the option to...
Let me tell you about a little thing called a GameCube and that Zelda title that went there. Like, this is not new for Nintendo.
Was the GameCube already off the shelves by the time?
That is the last game for the GameCube.
But the GameCube was still available to buy then?
Well, I mean, like, the Wii U will still be available to buy. You just want people to get it from Nintendo.
Okay.
By that point, it was full on Wii.
Yeah. Okay. So we don't know a lot at the minute, but I don't know. I wouldn't expect them to just do a surprise like that.
Yes.
They've already made a statement to say March. So.
Well, I mean, that was in an earnings call. That wasn't a statement. That was to people who were investors.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I was like, oh my god, it'll be up by March next year. Da, 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 da. And again, not to get on my soapbox that I got on last week, I'd like to know some information about this console now. I think it's about time.
We all heard the rumours, and it would make a lot of sense if the rumours were true.
I did see an image floating around, actually, that I've not really seen on any video game sites. Okay. And it looks like a tablet.
An imagining.
With a cradle. So it looked like a tablet you could plug into a cradle, but then it also had this controller that snapped on either side of the tablet, or then it snapped together to create one controller.
Right. Yeah, so I've seen this image too.
Yeah.
Nice idea.
Yeah, if there's anything to
it. It makes so much sense for Nintendo to make their next console a handheld as well. They are huge in the handheld industry. The 3DS has done incredibly well.
Yes.
They've always succeeded in that, whereas they've often stumbled in recent years with consoles. So it's a safe bet that they'd like to stay in the handheld market but not say goodbye totally to the home market. But that made me start to think about, well, how are these games going to be if they're optimized for handheld? You know, what happens when you plug it into the cradle? Does it add some extra power to the handheld machine, enabling the visuals to look really good on a big TV? You know, how much power has the thing got when you play it on your TV? Or is it... You know, these are all questions that I'd like to see, because handhelds before... I mean, the PS Vita is a very capable handheld, but, you know, playing that on your TV, I can't imagine it looks as good as it does on your Vita screen.
I haven't actually tried it yet. I set it all up yesterday, but because I was downloading Virginia, I didn't play it on the TV, so I was going to play that and then maybe play a bit of Virtue's Last Reward.
Maybe the new technology that they've managed to create is kind of blurring those lines a little bit and giving you a great home console experience, but then managing to give you the same experience on a handheld, which would be revolutionary.
I think they can do, though. I mean, you know what I mean? You look at some games, like, they can deliver things like Xenoblade Chronicles on a handheld. I think the only limitations, really, of a handheld console are the size and scale of it. But I've played PS4 games on my Vita, like, through remote play, and short of the hitches in the thing there, that's been fine. Okay. Like, I've never really found that off-putting. I mean, it's like playing Persona 4 on a Vita is a perfectly fine game. That's a huge game, full of colour and full of spectacle.
Imagine entering a world like Breath of the Wild, but being restricted to the small screen of a handheld.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not that, is it? You can play it at home on a console.
Yes, that's right.
It is the hybrid between the two.
But some games are more suited to home console than they would be to handheld, and this is implying that everything is available for you to play in a handheld. So everything has to be optimized with that in mind.
I don't think so. I guess you could probably just have a second option for camera support, right? So, you know, it's a bit closer to you when you're playing on handheld, so you can see more stuff, and maybe there's a better zoom or something on it.
Or you think it's going to be a case that not all games released as a system are going to work as handheld games?
I don't think that's possible. No. I think at least if they work in some spectacle a bit, maybe, you know, like Animal Crossing, maybe you can only do certain things as opposed to...
Yeah, is it going to be like the Dreamcast and the VMU? It won't be that big of a difference, but they take an aspect of the game and, like, mini games allow that.
Yeah. No, I think it'll be a full console, man. I honestly, I saw something today as well about them projecting onto a surface and it won't break an image. So maybe it's even so much so you can project it onto a wall or something. Like,
wow. Well, I can't wait to find out for certain.
That's a brilliant patent I saw making the rounds. It was essentially them making a project. They've made Nintendo patented projection technology that will project onto any surface. So say there's my kitchen. There's worktops. There's stools and things.
Yeah.
The projection works in such a way that even if you projected it into my kitchen, and bear in mind my kitchen has a spice rack, so it would be terrible for playing games on, it would map to every surface and it would be aware of the depth. So where you were sitting now, you would still have a full screen, even though, you know, it wouldn't stretch and warp around in the ways a traditional projector
does. I'm imagining Mario in your kitchen at the moment.
Yes, you should.
Yeah.
Mario would be great in my kitchen. And I mean, if you can do some kind of AR around that, you know what I mean? Some kind of AR projection that's aware of like surfaces and things. That could be amazing games, you know what I mean? You could be going out and about and projecting Mario onto walls and running along street tops and stuff.
I mean, that would be revolutionary.
Yes.
To be able to, use surfaces to play games on the...
Take gaming into the real world. That would be cool. Yeah. On that note, let's see what the NX brings. I hope by... next time we podcast, we'll be able to tell you, because Thomas, you're not here next weekend.
Oh no, I'm afraid I'm not.
Neither am I.
We're busy bees again. I got another wedding to attend. So.
I will be actually in Swindon. So if you are around that area, hit us up on Twitter and I will tell you what I'm doing. I shall remain ambiguous on this podcast. But if you would like to get in touch with us, you can at TMAcast. You can get hold of me and Tom separately at TomParry11 and at GameBoyle on the old Twitters.
Yeah, and if you want to send us a intro for next time,
yeah, why not?
We'll do your intro. It's not too vulgar,
exactly,
or offensive in any way. We'll do it.
Try not to be Galgan. But you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TomAndMattAttack. You can find us on Twitter, as I've said, at those places, and you can even find this podcast in a variety of places as well, such as blastprocess.com. TomAndMattAttack.com/podcast, as well as on iTunes and Stitcher. While you're in iTunes, be sure to give us a cheeky rate and subscribe and share the podcast with people you think might be interested, because that's how it gets around. Okay, Tom, I'm knackered. I'm going to go have a little bit of a lie down, I think.
Okay, no, please do.
Video games.
Please do. Relax.
Until the week after next, everybody.
Game on.